Quedaron mal.
La oposición, por su parte, asegura que para lograr la reconciliación nacional es necesaria una ley de amnistía.
Que nosotros le digamos al país que los 115 presos políticos en Venezuela van a estar en libertad. Que nosotros le digamos al país que los más de 2 millones de empleados públicos no van a seguir siendo perseguidos por pensar distinto. Que ya hay venezolanos que no van a seguir teniendo como barrotes las fronteras de nuestra Venezuela. Es una necesidad.
A este llamado de la oposición también se han sumado presidentes, exmandatarios y diversos actores internacionales.
Como todo demócrata, espero que salga adelante la ley de amnistía que está impulsando la valiente Asamblea Nacional de Venezuela, a la que apoyo sin reservas.
Entre los delitos amnistiados estarían instigación a la desobediencia de las leyes, al odio y a delinquir, apología del delito, causar pánico en la colectividad o mantenerla en zozobra mediante la difusión de informaciones falsas, importación, fabricación, porte, detentación, suministro u ocultamiento de artefactos explosivos o incendiarios, ultraje a funcionarios públicos, financiamiento al terrorismo, uso de menores en la comisión de delitos y tráfico de drogas de menor cuantía, siempre y cuando se hayan cometido con una finalidad política y dirigidos a cambiar el orden institucional o el gobierno establecido. Delitos severamente penados en todos los países del mundo, especialmente en aquellos desde donde hoy sus gobernantes piden libertad para aquellos dirigentes acusados por la justicia venezolana.
Pues los asesinatos que se han producido por estas personas que ahora van a ser amnistiadas en Colombia podrían llegar a tener, por la alevosía y la premeditación con la que se han cometido y por haber sido asesinados agentes del orden público, hasta 60 años de cárcel. En España, si se consideraran delitos contrarios al ordenamiento jurídico constitucional, serían considerados delitos de terrorismo y podrían tener sanciones de hasta 40 años de cárcel.
Ya en el año 2007, la oposición venezolana fue beneficiada con una ley de amnistía que promulgó el presidente Hugo Chávez para perdonar a todas aquellas personas que participaron en el golpe de Estado del año 2002. Ahora, 9 años después, la oposición vuelve a solicitar otra amnistía para perdonar a los mismos actores políticos, esta vez acusados por la justicia venezolana de promover diversas acciones violentas. Para que esta ley entre en vigencia, debe ser promulgada por el presidente Nicolás Maduro y por el Tribunal Supremo de Justicia. Ya el presidente Maduro ha dicho que él no la firmará porque a su juicio promueve la impunidad. El abogado español Enrique Santiago va más allá y explica que esta ley reúne todos los requisitos de lo que la jurisprudencia internacional penal ha venido considerando como leyes de autoamnistía.
Y en la práctica, las leyes de autoamnistía siempre, más temprano que tarde, han acabado siendo anuladas, bien por los órganos políticos del Estado donde fueron aprobados o cuando han llegado a tribunales internacionales.
La oposición propone una amnistía, que significa olvido, para lograr una reconciliación nacional. Desde la otra orilla, las víctimas aseguran que no se niegan a dicha reconciliación, pero que antes debe haber verdad, justicia, reparación y garantías de que nunca más se vuelvan a repetir estos hechos violentos que enlutaron a cientos de familias venezolanas. Karen Méndez, RT, Caracas.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras wordpress.com.
Esta semana la multiestatal Telesur TV realizó un programa conjunto con su homóloga árabe Al-Mayadeen para abordar temas de importancia en el acontecer mundial. El escritor Luis Brito García, su invitado, comentó sobre el terror que promueve y provocan los asesinatos selectivos, no solamente contra políticos o líderes, sino contra científicos y otros que se convierten en víctimas de países que pregonan la libertad y la democracia.
En América Latina, en el Medio Oriente, tenemos una cantidad de casos obvios de asesinato político, el de Yasser Arafat, que ya fue incluso creo que una confesión del Estado de Israel de que lo mandaron envenenar. Milosevic es prisionero, se está defendiendo en su juicio y al segundo día del juicio se muere repentinamente. Nadie sabe por qué. En América Latina, bueno, vamos a olvidarnos de los asesinatos de César Augusto Sandino, el Che Guevara, Emiliano Zapata, pero tenemos más cercano el asesinato de Roldós, presidente del Ecuador. Su hija me dijo que ya confiaba que eso era un asesinato, su avión explotó en el aire sin ninguna causa justificable. Está el caso del asesinato de Torrijos. Contra Fidel Castro se han intentado más de 2.000 asesinatos, solo que como que Fidel es muy astuto, no se deja asesinar. Está la muy sospechosa muerte de Hugo Chávez Frías. No había ningún enfermo de cáncer en su familia. Es atacado por una variedad de cáncer extraña y muy agresiva. Y uno de sus edecanes de seguridad desertó y está actualmente bajo el sistema de protección de testigos de Estados Unidos. Entonces vemos que se ha pasado a una nueva etapa, que es el asesinato. No solo ya Wafa ha hablado de que hay una política de Estado. El presidente Obama cada semana se reúne para considerar la lista de asesinatos selectivos. Es decir, él actúa como un asesino instigador, porque él es el que da los medios y da la orden. Y entonces hemos visto casos como el siguiente. Irán, por ejemplo. En Irán hay cerca de un centenar de científicos que han sido asesinados. No estamos hablando de combatientes, no estamos hablando de policías, de gente. No, no, no. Son personas cuyo único delito es ser un científico. Entonces se considera que ese país no debe tener científicos, son muertos asesinados. En Venezuela tenemos, bueno, cerca de 2 centenares de dirigentes agrarios que han sido asesinados por sicarios, cerca de 2 centenares de dirigentes sindicales. Hace poco un joven parlamentario, Robert Serra, fue asesinado también en circunstancias espantosas. Hay un nuevo mal en el mundo, que es el uso político masivo, institucional del asesinato, en condiciones en que no hay guerra, en condiciones en que la víctima no es militar ni está involucrado en cuerpos de seguridad, es simplemente un asesinato con fines políticos, vale decir, terrorista. En lugar de intervenir, actuar políticamente de acuerdo con unas ciertas reglas del juego, democracia, consenso de los pueblos, etcétera, se juzga que es más sencillo eliminar a alguien a quien se considera molesto. Fíjate, se pensó que la molestia que causaba Jorge Wenzel Gaitán, que era un líder radical del Partido Liberal, se iba a arreglar con 3 tiros, y esos 3 tiros todavía están resonando en Colombia. Es un proceso que ha costado decenas de millares de muertos. Hay que decir que antes del asesinato de Gaitán, ya la pugnacidad entre liberales y conservadores había producido muchos homicidios, asesinatos, etcétera, pero Gaitán representaba de tal manera las esperanzas de un pueblo que su homicidio fue ya como una especie de marca de que no era posible seguir aguantando aquello sin defenderse. Y ahí comenzó una sangrienta guerra civil que todavía dura. Hay unos acuerdos para intentar terminarla, pero todavía dura. Hay que ver lo que pueden ser las consecuencias de un asesinato en Oriente Medio y en otras regiones del mundo. Es la misma lógica.
Era el escritor venezolano Luis Brito García. Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa, el mismo que es producido gracias a las generosas donaciones de las y los radioyentes. A nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
This is Freak Radio Santa Cruz. Fuck the FCC.
Hi, this is Jello Biafra. If you're tired of propaganda and boring music on the radio, well, there is Free Radio Santa Cruz.
And up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3, freakradio.org perhaps, is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That's the end of March show, the March 31st, 2016 show. Going to have a lot of flashbacks for you, maybe some current interviews, and I don't know, you may find it interesting, so stay tuned.
The king of Babylon, Belshazzar, he sat feasting on his golden piazza with his court and concubines, stuffing in fried chicken and imported wines.
Many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you my son.
They sat there at that banquet board, drinking from the vessels of the Lord, big swells of the neighborhood, praising gods of gold and silver, iron and wood.
Many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you are fun.
That king of Babylon, Belshazzar, was a mean old razzadazzer, never paid no income taxes, the big shot of the Babylon Jerusalem axis. He was a tyrant, took delight in starting wars and doing fighting. Sons of Israel he called scamps, sent them all to making bricks and concentration camps.
Oh, many, many tickles, 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 many, many tickles, you are fun. Says so in the Bible, right there in the Bible.
The tribes of Judah from below heard the saxophones and trumpets blow. Sore and weary laid them down while Belshazzar's party kept going to town.
Many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you are fun.
The guests were shagging, horns were blowing, Lord, how gin and beer and wine was a-flowing. Of a sudden, all was still, everyone stood frozen to the floor with a chill.
Many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you are fun.
Oh, through the plaster and the brick, over by the candlestick, in the Belshazzar's banquet hall, a hand was writing, writing slowly on the wall. The king grew pale where he was sitting, fingers wrote and having written, vanished slowly overhead, and this is what the writing of the good Lord said.
Oh, many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you are fun. Says so in the Bible, right there in the Bible.
The king called all his council table to read the writing, but they weren't able. All his wise men, old and gray, couldn't tell him what the letters had to say.
Many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you are fun.
Belshazzar offered jewels and gold if the meaning of the words was told. In came Daniel, spurned them all, and for nothing told the bad news on the wall.
Many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you are fun.
King, them words mean to stop your flaunting. You've been weighed and you're found wanting. All your days is numbered days. The Lord don't like dictators or dictators' ways. Belshazzar cried out, man, you're lying. But there was no use denying, for he saw those words divine shining out just like a cafeteria sign.
Oh, many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you are fun.
Now the king of Babylon was slain, but the children of the Lord remain. All his idols turned to rust, crumbled are his kingdom and his power to dust.
Crumbled are his kingdom and his power to dust.
Many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you are fun. Oh, many, many tangles, 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 many, many tangles, you are.
And no, that's not going to be the new theme of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, but I thought I would throw a little in to enrage the atheists among us as well. Many, many tekel from Pins and Needles, a musical of the 30s, in the days when old Stalin was regarded as a hero by many in the left. So, welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to kind of kick off the show with a little something from former attorney and current legal worker Ray Glock Gruneich, from the days when he was an attorney. This was actually 28 years ago, in 1988, when there were candidates running for the Santa Cruz City Council, and there was a massive campaign being waged, not just for the occasional letter, not just if a council member raised the issue and he could bring some people to City Council. They spoke once and then went home and spent their time conferring as to what to do, which is what we have now under the current situation with the sleeping ban. Though we do have a small gang of fighters, the Freedom Sleepers, in front of City Hall every Tuesday night. Third number 38 happened just recently on the 29th. And there's going to be a larger protest early in April, next Tuesday. And that is going to be Tuesday the 5th, when it will also be a memorial for a wheelchair Chris Bezerre, I believe his name is, for those of you who remember him. Food Not Bombs activists Abby Samuels and Keith McHenry have taken a special interest in Chris's case. They apparently knew him pretty well, or at least they knew him well enough to be concerned and to want to memorialize, there we go, his passing. That's going to be at the Freedom Sleepout number 39 on April 5th. Probably in the afternoon, and the sleepout goes into the evening. So let's hear a little from Ray Glock-Grunike. We kind of join him in the middle of a question he's posing to a panel of candidates on right-wing radio station KSCO. One of them was Arnie Levine, city council member of Santa Cruz City Council, who was running again for office. He was a sort of a conservative who, people like to say, had a heart. But this entire city council, which was dominated by the so-called progressives, and the mayor of the council, the leader of the council was John Laird, there was Marty Wormhout, Jane Weed, who's still around, although not on the council, and others. Let's hear Ray's question and the answers or non-answers of these candidates.
And I say that for a very specific reason. The camping warrants are always made to have less than $1,000 bail, so that, and under the law, you do not extradite from another county when the bail is set at less than $1,000. So it's not a technique to get them back here and recycled in. Rather, it's a technique to shove them out of the county. It's an exportation program, and it's been a long-honored kind of policy that we've been using for lots of poor people, is that they can't face court, to shove them out of the county with a threat of an arrest warrant that will only be enforceable inside the county. So it's a deportation program that's going on. But since every other county is doing the same thing with their poverty people, we tend to be shunting our poor people back and forth between the counties. And if you ever want a really eloquent description of that process, in the European context, read Down and Out in Paris and London by George Orwell, and you get the picture of what it's about.
Okay, do you have a question?
Yes.
Please.
Okay.
We're waiting.
Okay, second. This question is mostly addressed to the other three. Arnie dodged the previous question entirely about what the role of the city council is by correctly pointing out that it wasn't recycling. The city council's present policies are disastrous and persecutive. How can you, Arnie, since I know you personally to be a decent human being, how can you possibly justify the impact of this indecent law on the lives of the people who do not, in fact, have a place to sleep? And that is the housing element, Mr. Weber, whether you want to recognize it or not, of many of these people. How can you justify a continuation of that policy? Rather than going on with more speech, I'll hang up and let you folks answer that.
Thanks very much. Let's keep it brief if we possibly can.
Yeah, maybe 30 seconds.
Let's let John Weber answer this question.
Yeah, I don't mean to say that there are not people in the community that we call homeless that don't have a home. I understand that that is a portion of the problem. I don't think giving them a home, whether it's temporary or permanent, and not to mention the fact that we might not be able to afford it, it is necessarily solving their problem. It may well be solving our problem in the sense that we don't see them anymore and they're out of our vision. But I don't believe that we serve either them or ourselves if we fail to figure out exactly what their problem is. I agreed that there is probably a good portion of them that either can't afford an apartment or sleep in their car or whatever. But that doesn't happen. There's a story behind that. What's the story? What is their real problem? I don't believe it's a housing solution is going to solve the real problem.
Thank you, Don Weber. How about Arnie Levine? Since you were referred to numerous times.
Well, it's a very complex issue, and I cannot see. You know, the more you get into this thing, the more roadblocks are put in the way. Your first impulse as a citizen, or as I did on the council the first year, when we had those tremendously cold, wet, rainy, hard, rainy nights, I suggested we were building a third deck on the parking garage downtown. I said, well, they all have a sleeping roll. Let them use the second deck. It'll be covered. We can always put a tarp down on one side. They could use it after a certain hour at night, and then they could, they'd have to leave early in the morning so that it doesn't interfere with the prime function of the structure. I also thought that there should be while we were building the third deck, to put in some bathroom facilities. But there's only one public bathroom downtown, and that's on Soquel Avenue. But as I became more aware of responsibilities to the city as a whole, I find that there are, you might say, roadblocks, quote unquote, that come to that kind of thinking. And you have to look at the entire picture and what risks the city has to take. And the city has done, what the city has done is to gather resources, and we bought this place from the university. We put in as many as we can. We're remodeling the thing to hold more people. There are 17 public agencies within a block and a half of the mall that serve these people. Many people come to that. It's a very difficult situation.
Thank you, Arnie Levine.
We're willing to listen to it.
We apologize, Don Lane and Jane Immler. We should move on to...
Those two, the last, Don Lane and Jane Immler, were probably... Jane was definitely the radical or the... the same person in the group, and Don Lane was running with the Scan-endorsed progressives, and he favored, I wasn't sure whether it was, there were numerous proposals floated, safe zones, a campground, a temporary suspension of the sleeping ordinance. He favored some of that. And as I've mentioned in past shows, he tried at one point to raise the issue after... Well, I think it was a month and a half after he'd been elected, after the winter recess, which meant the people outside had to suffer a winter of sleeping ban tickets and harassment. And at that time, there was shelter for 14 people in the River Street shelter. I think 12 of the beds were reserved for mentally ill people. Two of them were open. And there was an interface satellite shelter program that served us 30 or 40 people at the time, I'm not sure. And this, I mean, there was obviously inadequate shelter. And the kind of responses that Arnie Levine gave, and he seemed to be affected by what Ray Glockgrunike had said, which is that he was, you know, why? How can a decent person... be on a council and vote in favor of laws that create such suffering? And his answer is, oh, it's a complex question. It's a difficult matter. I proposed this, and he didn't mention why there'd be any problem with the idea of the second floor of a parking garage being used as a dusk to dawn or gone by dawn camping area where you could park your vehicle or lay out your sleeping bag, which Huff has proposed over the years as well, probably taking the proposal from Arnie Levine. And the answer has to do with
the middle class sensibilities, the paranoia, and the and that kind of sums it up, those two things of the West Side constituencies that the Santa Cruz so-called progressive city council listens to. That is, they're progressive on issues thousands of miles away from Santa Cruz, but on issues in Santa Cruz having to do with poor people, other than providing a few more social services, they're not interested. The most basic issue, that is sleep, they don't mind leaving in the hands of the sleepbuster police. That's always been the case under progressives, under Take Back Santa Cruzers, under conservatives. They all come from a pretty much the same narrow spectrum of ideology. And you hear the same kinds of excuses. It's complex. It's difficult. What's the story behind these people? I mean, do they really deserve to be able to sleep at night? I mean, we have to be able to resolve their homelessness. We can't just let them sleep at night. That's not good enough. Ridiculous statements that while their considerations that should be looked at, they don't in any way obviate the basic concern that everyone has a right to sleep, everyone has a need to sleep, everyone will sleep, and everyone continues to sleep, creating a greater, a worser situation than would be the case with resources offered, similarly with bathrooms. So that's what was going on in 1988, and it's still going on. More questions on the same show.
Go ahead, Marcia.
Okay. I imagine someone there has got to be old enough to remember the internment camps from World War II.
Yes.
Okay.
You bet.
Using this bitter pill as a picture for the possibility of our homeless here, I think it could be done all over. But it would give the people a place for shelter. It would give them a place for shower, for bathroom conveniences, a place for eating, a place with an address where they have a start. At least look at it in the possibilities of a immediate cure for the problem that with us coming in winter here now.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Arnie Levine.
That's right.
The idea of using a campsite came to mind 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago.
Four.
No. Wait a minute. Hold on. When the project of homeless, of trying to help and to do something about it, came before us, I called several of the campsites that we have in the area. The one that comes to mind most quickly is the Seventh-day Adventist one on Old Santa Fe Road. And I called and spoke to them about the possibility of using it since to my way of thinking, they didn't use it year-round. And that perhaps for those times that they didn't, we could set something up. I called the Panetta's office about the possibility of getting those big army tents.
Right.
Set something up. Unfortunately, it did not come to pass, but the thought is a good one. The question is, right now, I guess that we have several state parks in our area that have the facilities that could be used, and there are several commercial campsites that are not used on a year-round basis. Perhaps there might be some arrangements that are worked out on it.
Who put the monkey wrench in it so it didn't work last time?
They were unwilling, and I don't want to put them in a negative thing, but I found out, you know, an idea comes up and you go running around chasing you're all hot under the collar about it. But they too have their campsites. To me it was empty, but they had conventions coming in on a regular basis. That's something that I as a passerby didn't know about.
Let me interject something here very briefly. Arnie mentioned the Seventh-day Adventist camp on Old Santa Fe Road. That's close to where I live. I think that may have been a good suggestion. However, maybe a better suggestion, close to the Seventh-day Adventist camp is the O'Neill Ranch. And maybe that might, as a possibility of a good suggestion, that might be worth exploring.
The Seventh-day Adventist camp, as a possibility,
mm-hmm.
has the facilities.
Well, I don't disagree with what you're saying.
And the O'Neill Ranch, you'd have to start from scratch.
They want to say, Save Soquel won't start from scratch anyway. But,
sure.
Go ahead. Jane, do you want to address that?
Yes, I would like to, and I'll have to disagree with Arnie that it was 2 years ago.
No.
Actually, it will be 4 years ago in January when we start talking to them about cold and rainy night shelters and campgrounds. And
4 years ago?
Right, exactly. 4 years
ago. Talk is cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, right. It certainly is. And instead of what getting in cold and rainy night shelters using existing buildings or motels that aren't used in the winter, and in combination with a campground, we got the $600,000 shelter that sleeps 14.
It just seems to me, with all
the
political power that every one of you hold down there, and that every one of you are striving to hold, that, my God, the power that you must be able to surmount with Sacramento and everything, just it seems like something to be done quicker.
There is.
Maybe we should let Don and Don comment on this, if it's all right.
Yeah, sure, I'll go first. The suggestion that you
Don Weber
here sounds to me as though it's probably beyond the scope of the authority, certainly the spending authority of the city of Santa Cruz. We're running for a city office,
yeah.
And the problem, at least at the level that you are addressing it, at large-scale campgrounds and large-scale housing facilities, seems to me, if it's going to be coming at all, to be probably emanating from the state or even the federal government. We're pretty limited in city government as to what we can do and what we can spend. We can dream, but I don't know that we can carry out a grandiose plan to house, or camp in this case, hundreds, thousands of people. We have a problem probably close to that size in the city of Santa Cruz.
Yeah, but I'm not disputing that. All I'm saying is your voice carries a pound of lead where an individual layperson carries an ounce of feathers.
I might mention, caller, that on Saturday afternoon from 12 to 2, we're having all the supervisors here, except for Mrs. Levy, who chose not to.
All right.
12 to 2 Saturday afternoon, right, Mike? And you might address this to all of them, Mrs. Levy.
Not all the supervisors.
The supervisorial candidates.
Name basis.
Okay. Don Lane has been biting his nails here, so proceed, Don.
Oh, that's okay. Don is elected to pass, but
he's elected to pass.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Marcia, for your call. We go now to line 4 where Ken has been waiting. Ken, you're on the air.
Yeah, how are you this evening?
And, you know, it's amazing. I mean, this woman on the phone is aghast that it's been 4 years since the issue was first raised and nothing has been done. Well, that was 32 years ago. It was first raised long ago, but it was raised in Santa Cruz in the form of protests by Jane Immler. She began her hunger fast at the town clock, seeking a cold and rainy night shelter, an end to the sleeping ban, an end to police violence against the homeless. And what they got was Bob Listener, who's the moderator of the show, and it may not be on KSCO. I'm not quite clear what station it's on. I'm playing from old tapes. But Listener's actually opened up the first cold and rainy night shelter for one season, the winter season, 1984-85, and what is now the Kumbwa Jazz Center downtown. And that was it for the one-time deal. A second hunger fast, again by Immler and by others, including activist Linda LeMaster, embarrassed and pressured the city into purchasing from UCSC what is now the River Street Shelter, at that time housed 14 people. Now it houses, I think, 30. They expanded it again after activist pressure. I was arrested in a protest where we chained ourselves to the furniture demanding that the annex be opened instead of delayed for another 6 months as they talked about doing. But that was the next year. Actually, no. That was actually probably 2 months later after this program aired. But there is clearly no desire to grapple with this issue seriously. You can, I don't know the reason he didn't address it, because he raised the issue in his campaign. Don Lane, who we then called Gone Lame, this was his first electoral campaign, didn't address the question in this particular round. He has finally, 28 years later, addressed the issue and brought it up at city council and been defeated, and we've heard nothing more from him. At least I haven't. And here's a more in-depth interview on November 11th, 1988, where myself and attorney Ray Glock-Grunike, who was actually defending me in court as well, at different points. I don't think I was charged with anything. I've been arrested for sleeping repeatedly in sleeping bands, protests outside the city council, possibly at the town clock by that time. But I think we went into depth on some of the issues on radio station KZSC, the student radio station.
Area for years, the deputies had gone through there five or six times in 1987, and there had been no problems. They hadn't issued any citations. It was only when the homeless activism became more intense downtown that eager camper busters, perhaps one-time troll busters, and there are officers like this in the Santa Cruz Police Force who enjoy hassling people at campsites and who feel it's part of their public duty to tromp out of the way, through the bushes, find people who are sleeping there, and ticket them or arrest them. It was only after the homeless activism became intense that these campsites in the Paso Tiempo property were busted. The Santa Cruz Sentinel was called in to take pictures and to tell about tons of trash. And after that, the campers themselves organized a cleanup and did a major cleanup on the campsite, which was finished by the property owners themselves and by the, to some extent, with some help, I think, from the city and the county. So I think that you've got to be wary of stereotypes in this. Be wary of stereotypes and be wary of people who are presenting the issue in a fashion that's designed to appeal to your prejudices. You know, these people want to sleep all over town. They want to sleep wherever they want. Nobody really wants to sleep downtown on the sidewalk, particularly on a rainy night or even on a non-rainy night. There's a lack of privacy there. But when you reach the point where the entire city becomes off limits, then maybe you don't give a damn where you sleep at a certain point. Maybe you reach the point where you do sleep there, although frankly I haven't seen too many people sleeping downtown.
Except during demonstrations.
Occasionally during demonstrations you find people sleeping in.
Go ahead. Well, I was just saying, I really feel that all the misconceptions about the homeless people really, they hinder helping them whatsoever. You know, I know working at the table, I get a lot of, well, you know, if they really wanted to work, they could go find a job. And it's like, I was talking to Gray Bear, for instance, and he's saying, well, how am I supposed to get a job? I was sleeping on the streets where the people, the owners of the mall see me, so they're probably not going to be likely to hire me. If you're not getting any sleep, you can't conduct a coherent conversation for a possible job. If you're not clean, somebody's not going to hire you. You know, all those things come into play. And no phone number. And it's not a matter of, you know, these people wanting to be poor because they want to be poor. I think it's very important to keep in mind that there are homeless people and they are victim of the system. And I think that that's a very important thing to keep in mind, because I know when I work at the table, like I said, a lot of people really think, well, they can go find a job if they really want it, and they're that way because they want to be that way, which is not true at all.
Can you tell about your table on campus and where it is?
We have a table on campus, and it's Monday through Friday, and it's out for about somewhere between about 3 to 4 hours Monday through Friday, and it's located right where the Whole Earth restaurant is, that little cement thing across the way by the bus. It's very obvious. You can't miss us if you're walking down. It's right across from Cal College and the bookstore.
Can people volunteer to work there?
Yeah, they can. We have, we tell people, like I always tell them, if you want to volunteer to work the table, that's fine. We don't say you have to work, you know, a certain amount of hours or anything like that. Any help, any assistance whatsoever is great in any way, any amount of time.
How many workers do you have on that table?
Currently we have about 9 or 10. But we'd like to get some more just to allow a little flexibility. And I'm really hoping to pair people up, too, because I know that it's easier to work a table if you're working with somebody else. And plus, if somebody might be a little bit more knowledgeable in some areas than somebody else, So.
You got a phone number you can have people call?
Yeah, if you're interested in working the table, you can talk to either me, and I'm Jenny, or my roommate Maria, and our phone number is 458-2319.
Okay, we got about 20 minutes left. If there's anyone who'd like to call, the number's 429-4036. Please give us your comments and add to this conversation. This is the place where you come to get your voice aired. We have a caller right now. This is public-supported radio at KZSC, so if you enjoy what you're hearing, please call 429-2811 to subscribe. Okay, we're going to get to our caller now. You're on KZSC. Tell us what you're thinking. Hello.
Hi, is this KZSC?
This is KZSC.
Is this the phone number for the radio show, the phone number?
Exactly, exactly.
Am I talking on the air right now?
You are on the air right now as we speak.
I'm listening to your show.
Okay.
Well,
thank you very much.
Yeah, and I wanted to comment on a few things and then ask a couple of questions.
Certainly.
A while ago, a woman called in saying she lived on Ocean Street and the homeless really bothered her with the trash and that she's very scared of them, thinking she could get attacked and things like that. And information going on about certain issues, like one thing he just said was that alcoholism is so much more in effect than cocaine abuse, and that people have this idea that cocaine is so terrible. And kind of a parallel to that is that that women are more likely to be attacked and in more of a threat
by men they know than by strangers. And so I think that this fear of being attacked on the street, whether it's a homeless person or not, is verging on paranoia in some women, and they're getting it a little out of proportion. Even though it is a real fear, if they were more aware of that they were actually in more danger in their own home with a person that they were slightly acquainted with, that that might ease some tension with the situation. My only experience with the homeless is on the mall. I don't really live in an area where I see any of that. And I haven't been particularly harassed, except I have seen some incidences where a person, now I can't assume that they were homeless, although you could look and guess that, a person was yelling very loudly and flailing his arms around and running up and down the street, and it was very frightening, although he wasn't like after anybody. I think that this society we are so easy to place our fear onto people that we don't understand. Like, we fear old people, so we shut them away and put them in convalescent hospitals. We fear fat people, and there's this whole fat phobia that the whole advertising world has preyed upon. And I'm guessing that maybe fat people kind of hide themselves away feeling bad about themselves. And I'm thinking that maybe the kind of mental illness doesn't necessarily come about because the people are homeless, but because they are subject to negative feelings or negative comments themselves by people who are walking through the mall who don't like them or think they're gross or are scared by them, or whether it's on the mall or somewhere else in town. And so this whole you guys are lowly, you guys are less than people attitude is being thrown on them, and then that in turn, you hear that enough, and now, you know, you can believe anything if you hear enough bad things about yourself. And it maybe that's where it's coming from, and not just because they don't have, you know, a permanent shelter.
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying about that? I mean, is there someone there who could speak on that?
Anyone.
Okay.
Okay.
My only other question was, I don't really understand where all this got started. Did homeless people come to one of the four of you there, or did they come to some kind of a city government person and say, we need your help, find us, or something like that?
The
Okay, go ahead.
The first, I missed some of what you said at first, but I think a lot of the reason people do go crazy or get into bad situations has to do with the society generally, and the fact that people tend to, they're cut off from each other generally in their social contacts in life. I mean, you walk down the street, and, you know, it's like you're alone, even though there are hundreds of people there. I mean, it's kind of a weird, frightening situation. Unless you make a real effort to contact other people, you get dismissed. And that's, of course, intensified if you're a homeless person, because then there's the additional fear that people have that they're gonna, you're going to ask them for something, and, you know, then you look kind of grubby, and, you know, that sort of thing. In regard to the second question, I began a petition for homeless rights after I attended a meeting of Jane Yokoyama's Human Relations Task Force in May of this last year, when I was hearing that the same kinds of abuses that I'd heard about for years were still going on, namely the harassment of people for sleeping. And these abuses concern people sleeping in their cars. In other words, people were actually in their own vehicles were being awakened by police in the middle of the night and being given tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Not being arrested in most cases, but being given tickets. And I felt that this had gone on, this had gone on since the 70s, as far as I knew, and it seemed bizarre this was going on with a progressive city council majority. So I figured the thing to do was to bring it to the attention of the city council majority with a petition and, in essence, put some pressure on them to take some action on the issue. I only learned later that this city council had ducked the issue 3 years before when the campground was proposed. Instead, they went for a $600,000 River Street mini shelter, which has been discussed previously on the air by Ray. And they also, they ducked it again in 1987 in the summer when Paige Smith's committee, a citizens committee on the homeless, arranged for discussions with Santa Barbara, which, as I mentioned before, has changed its sleeping law. They set up a direct phone hook with Santa Barbara, and they had conversations. And the Paige Smith's committee tried to get Marty Wormhout and other city council members to agree that there should be no ticketing except on complaint.
This is in Santa Barbara?
No, this is in Santa Cruz.
Oh, Santa Cruz, okay.
Because in Santa Barbara, they were using a policy which essentially said, we aren't going to ticket you for sleeping, at least in most places we won't ticket you for sleeping. So there still is a camping law in Santa Barbara. But again, arrests have dropped by 75%. I say tickets have dropped by 75%. And in 87, in the summer, the city council declined to advise the police chief here in town, Jack Bassett, to ticket on complaint. So in essence, the great progressive majority, or I should say the slim progressive majority, refused to, in essence, honor the rights of people who are sleeping in their cars, even though they had been presented with clear evidence from Santa Barbara that the situation had not produced a huge influx of people and was not causing a lot of problems.
Okay, so the decrease, you said it decreased by 75%. Was that due to all of these, these actions being taken?
I think it was due to the fact that, one, they changed the law, and two, they're aware that there is an active homeless movement down there that won't stand for a lot of nonsense.
Okay, I'm getting confused. Are you talking about Santa Barbara
or
here?
Santa Barbara. Here, buses have not been reduced. Buses continue.
Okay, they have not been reduced here, and the law is in Santa Barbara. It's not here.
That is correct. But the point, the reason I mention is because there was an informational hookup that was done between the city council, a committee of the city council in 1987, and
city council?
Our city council.
Okay, please make this clear.
I'm sorry. The Santa Cruz City Council in 1987 arranged to talk to the Santa Barbara people. Some of them were city council members down there in Santa Barbara. Others were lawyers in Santa Barbara.
Okay.
And they got some information that, in essence, the policy had not produced a large influx of people in Santa Barbara. The change in the Santa Barbara sleeping law, which was the year before in 1986. So, but they did not act upon this. That is, they being the Santa Cruz City Council. They did not inform the police chief to ticket only upon complaint, which was what I think Paige Smith's Citizens Committee was seeking up here in Santa Cruz. Instead, they ignored the information that they had gotten, and they continued the current police practice here in Santa Cruz of ticketing people who are sleeping in their vehicles.
Okay, so that's, even though this whole talk show has pretty much gone off on all these different questions and problems regarding the homeless, the main issue here is police harassment. and that you want to eliminate that.
That's the nitty-gritty, and I'm encouraging people to come to the first city council meeting, which will be on Tuesday, to show their support for a change in this policy. I'm hoping that the new city council will look at the matter differently, but it would be nice for the city council to see that there is a broad constituency for changing this current sleeping ban.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage people to come, and I would encourage people to get in touch with us through 429-9801, which is a number where people can volunteer help or get information about the street sheet, which is something we put out. Again, the number 429-9801, and we have a table on the Pacific Garden Mall, usually located near Rainbow Records.
Okay, well, can I just get back to my other question?
Sure.
Let me expand on my question. Have you had close contact or continuing contact with homeless people? Have you talked to them? I mean, I'm trying to get an idea of what kind of relationship is going on here between the homeless and between you and any other people who are trying to help them, or at least believe you're trying to help them. I don't mean to like throw doubt onto what you're doing. I think that this is a great cause, and it's really good that that people are out there helping.
We'd be happy to have you volunteer.
what exactly have any of these homeless people come to you and said, you know, can you work with us to do this? Are they contributing to this? I don't understand.
It should be said that of the five people here, only one of us is homeless, me, and I'm homeless. I have a vehicle I live in.
Okay.
And I'd love a place to stay if anybody wishes to put me up.
Okay.
But in answer to your question, a delegation of homeless people did not specifically show up at the Human Relations Task Force and say, we want you to change this. There were some homeless individuals who had been harassed. Mm-hmm. A man named Ron O'Donnell had a complaint of harassment. Homeless people that I've spoken to have given us a lot of support.
Uh-huh.
I've been arrested recently, as I mentioned earlier in the air, and released, and homeless people come up to me and they say, keep fighting, it's a good thing you're doing, we're glad you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary-wise, they're occasionally, after police have cracked down more, have been people who have become annoyed with me, and they've said, you're encouraging police harassment, they're never going to change this law, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
But in the main, it's been the first rather than the second response.
Can I respond by saying that I didn't go to the homeless asking if they could, if I could be of help to them. I'm an attorney, and I've had, over the past 12 years, hundreds of homeless people who were coming to me and asking for assistance on dealing with these things.
Okay.
And so I'm responding primarily as a professional, and then secondarily as a political activist to these situations involving the homeless. Now, I think other attorneys do not get as many calls because most people do not associate attorneys as a stereotype with people who would be particularly responsive to the needs of the very poor. But there are actually a number who would be responsive. I would like to just very briefly indicate four kinds of interests that I think we need to address. And I'm using your call now as sort of an opportunity for a wind-up statement here for myself. One category of interests are the really serious and dire physical interests of the homeless themselves. The need for a place to sleep, the need for hygiene such as showers and toileting facilities, etc. That's one set of interests. Another set of interests which likewise needs to be addressed are various problems that come from bona fide police concerns, burglary, harassment, sanitation, obstruction of sidewalks, etc., which is a distinct set of things that can be properly addressed in their own right. A third set of interests that need to be addressed, which are just quite distinct from the others, are the issues of cultural autonomy and integrity. The people who want to be able to sleep outside or sleep in various areas because of their own spiritual relationship to the earth or their own how that fulfills their own sense of self-development. And then finally, and one that typically goes unspoken, but I think happens to be the most controlling interest and the one that has taken heed of most of all, are the issues of cultural bigotry. the idea and all these stereotypes that we get into to somehow we are more worthy than other people. And I find particularly illuminating your example of how, for example, a woman can be subjected to abuse by her lover or her husband or be subjected to date rape, and yet what she articulates as her grievance is that that unknown weirdo on the sidewalk might attack her. That's sad, and it's characteristic of the kinds of evasions of personal responsibility that all of us, men and women, socially privileged and social underdogs alike, tend to go through. We avoid the real problems in our life and look for scapegoats out there to persecute.
And I think it's also a case of misinformation.
Yes.
At the same time.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Fonis. We have to close it right up here. We're coming on 5 minutes. Thank you. Okay, this is Hearing Voices, and I'm Dave, and I'm talking with homeless activists, and I'm going to ask you each for a... Sorry, we can't take any more phone calls, you on the phone there. if I can just ask you for about a minute or two of a closing statement. Charles Gray, please tell us what you're thinking.
Thank you. I'm mainly concerned with the human right to sleep. It's a biological necessity. It cannot be made illegal. If it's made illegal, it becomes impractical to enforce, and you just create a social problem that is going to cost both in terms of the harm it creates for the people that are homeless, and it's going to cost the taxpayer in the fact that it costs so much for the shelter of putting people in jail, and you're going to be putting more people in jail if you don't have some more positive solutions to this problem.
Okay, thank you for coming on the show. Maria Aldretti.
I'm here with the Student Alliance for the Homeless, and I feel that we need more of an awareness here on campus with the students, and being that we are a large constituent of this county, I do think that we do make a difference more than we can ever realize. And I think there's a social factor in this, that why these people are homeless. So we need to go past the person and look at the forces that are making these people homeless. And rather than calling them homeless, we have to realize that they are people.
Okay, Jennifer Kenley.
Okay, again, I'm here with the Student Alliance for the Homeless, and basically I just want everybody to remember that, you know, being homeless is a societal problem, and that, you know, having a sleeping ban like right now is not an answer to the problem, it's only encouraging it. And also, I just hope that everybody, by listening to the show, has a better awareness of the homeless people, and is maybe eliminating some of their misconceptions and stereotypes about these people.
Okay, Ray Grunack.
I made my summary statement with regard to the last caller, so I'd like to just put in this minute my plug to yet target another governmental agency, that is the Governing Board of the Santa Cruz Metropolitan Transit District, which provides our bus stations. They have a rule against you doing any bathing or showering, as they call it, in their restrooms. That means you cannot shave, you cannot wash under your armpits, you cannot engage in elementary hygiene. That would be very simple to change that rule, and they should do so. Thank you.
Okay, Robert North.
Yes, I want to put in a plug, too. There's a man named Anders Kaur who's currently in jail, and if you read City on a Hill Press this week, you can get more information on it. That's on page 18. I encourage folks who want to free Anders Kaur, who's essentially in jail on sleep crime, has been there for 2 weeks and faces 6 months in jail, to contact the Free Anders Kaur Committee, Jacqueline there, at 423-6268. That's 423-6268. And I also encourage everybody to show up at the upcoming city council meetings. Tuesday at 7:30, there'll be a meeting that's coming up. Show your opinion, show your support, and do end the sleeping ban as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Okay. Could we get those phone numbers from you yet again? Jenny, the number for the campus organization?
Okay. Actually, that was our home phone number. But if you want to just find us, we're just out of the table every day. So...
Okay, and the phone number for anyone who wants to volunteer.
And that's 458-2319.
458-2319, if you'd like to volunteer for the on-campus organization for the homeless. And Ray, or Robert?
For downtown, if you want to volunteer either for legal help to write letters for the editor, which you can do independently without calling, circulate petitions, possibly volunteer to sleep in at the upcoming sleep-ins, give us a call at 429-9801, 429-9801, Or I'll get down to the homeless table, which, as I said, is right across from the Cooper House, usually. And we can use all the volunteers that we can get.
Okay, I'd like to thank my guests. Again, this has been Hearing Voices on KZSC Santa Cruz. And this.
And that was the millennium that was, 1988, November 11th. And you get to hear it decades later and draw your own conclusions. That was Phil Oakes' Do What I Have to Do from his album, or his posthumous album, A Toast to Those Who Are Gone. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, or perhaps you're listening on the computer at freakradio.org. Whatever you are, or wherever you are situated, I'm giving you an opportunity to make $500. And if you heard this before, well, time to go get a cup of coffee. But we still lack a studio. We've been trying different prospects. We thought we almost had one, but it fell through. We're hoping to have another one. It's looking optimistic, but we really need a studio, or I don't think we'll be around here come our 22nd birthday. We just had our 21st birthday. Free Radio started in 1995. So if you would like to help, look around and see if you know anybody in the greater Santa Cruz area has either an indoor area, 10 by 10 space with access to electricity and internet, or even an outdoor area where we could build a shed. And this would be a studio where we would have to have 24-hour access, but we would not be engaging in illegal activity. While we are a pirate radio station, and some will call us pirates, anybody hosting the studio would not be liable because it would be an internet from that point. If you want to pass on any information you have, the number to call is 423-4833, 423-4833. That's also the number for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and my home phone. I'm Robert Norris. And it's also a number to call if you have any comments on anything you're hearing on the air or any thoughts you have about perhaps being on the air. Coming up on the Sunday, April 3rd show, I'm hoping to have some discussions of the cannabis ordinance, the cannabis cultivation ordinance that the county is currently looking over. And I'd love also to have an update, although I don't know if I will have that, on access of low-income people, low-income access, that is to say, to medical marijuana. That's one of the concerns that I've expressed a lot over the years. Greenway is closed, and I think there's a second, or now the only, medical marijuana facility open in Santa Cruz, although, again, I have been preoccupied with both medical problems and focused on the Freedom Sleepers and other actions around the sleeping ban, so I haven't really turned back to kind of keep up on that really important issue. It has been important to me over the years. Here is a cut, a relatively long one, from Black Agenda Radio, hosted by Glenn Ford, about selective enforcement. I've been particularly interested in the activities of folks on the street denouncing police abuse, most recently and most prominently against African Americans. But I think this significantly impacts poor and homeless people as well, of all colors, all races, and all sizes, shapes, and genders, and sexual preferences, and sexual identifications, and I could go on, particularly disabled people. Let's listen in. If you want to actually hear the entire program, it's from Black Agenda Report for the week of March 14th, 2016.
Robert Ganji, Executive Director of the Police Reform Organizing Project in New York, has been busy monitoring courtroom activity around the city. Ganji reports that the courts are busy prosecuting black and brown men on minor offenses, an indication that the broken windows philosophy of policing is alive and well in New York City.
Yeah, and continuing to inflict harm and hardship on primarily New Yorkers of color and primarily low-income New Yorkers of color who have insufficient resources generally and insufficient political standing to protect themselves against the abusive and discriminatory police practices represented by broken windows tactics in New York City. We were just in Manhattan Raymond Park today and we saw 21 cases, 19 of which involved people of color. Wednesday, we saw about 30 cases, arraignments. There was one white person. Everybody else was a person of color. So these practices continue to represent a blatantly racist form of policing. And everybody that we saw, it would be a stretch of the imagination to think of them as dangerous or predatory people. Some of them clearly had either mental health issues or drug or alcohol addiction issues. Some of them were homeless or nearly homeless. the charges involve, generally speaking, minor things. Could be a suspended license, could be begging on the subway. We saw a couple of cases involving trespass, and when we spoke to the people who had been charged with trespass and even pled guilty to it, they were visiting friends. Or there was one case where a man was standing in the lobby of his wife's cousin's building, and the cousin had just had a baby, and he was meeting her in the lobby to give her money so she could go out and buy formula for her child. And the cops came in and spoke rudely to the guy. He asked him why he was standing there and asked him to spot his ID, and they ended up arresting him and charging him with trespass. And these kind of harassment tactics are not aberrational. They occur on a regular basis in New York City. It's a function of broken windows policing, and it's also a function of the quota system. Police officers are evaluated primarily on the basis of punitive interactions they have with New Yorkers. That's arrests, stops, summonses. And if the officers don't make their numbers in a given month, say, the NYPD will sanction them in one way or another.
And those quotas are not in effect in mostly white areas of New York.
Our understanding from talking to police officers and also observing and having an understanding of how the police operates and who they arrest and what they charge them with is that it is in fact true that in some precincts there are no quotas. And in precincts that quote unquote serve low-income communities of color, there are quotas. We heard from one police officer who was willing to talk to us that when an officer is a newbie and he or she gets assigned for the first time to an inner city precinct, one of their first questions when they get to the precinct is, what's their number?
And what's their number means how many
means how many arrests, summonses, stops do they have to make to hit the number that's expected of them so that they can get a positive evaluation.
Yes, in your piece you talk about officers sometimes leaving so-called hot spots, that is, places where
right.
they know they can get arrests if they want
right.
to, leaving them alone early in the month, so that they can make up their quota numbers at the end of the month by just going to the hot spot and giving
right.
everybody a summons or arrest.
Right, or making an arrest, right. And so in effect, the quota system in that instance contributes to the prevalence of crime. That police officers, because of the quota system, have an incentive to let crime thrive in certain areas of the community, so that they always have a kind of fallback if they're coming to the end of the month and they haven't made their numbers. What we've also heard about from several officers is a practice called cemetery summonses, where officers, again, if they're coming to the end of the month and they don't have sufficient numbers of notches on their belt, they will go into the cemetery that's in their precinct and write out summonses to the names of the dead people that they see on their tombstones. So there are many ill effects of the summons and arrest quotas, and it's a very corrupt process. But the ultimate damage it does is provide incentives for police officers to target and harass low-income people of color.
You talk about an instance in which community members expressed concern about an armed robbery in their neighborhood. They asked the cops what they were going to do about it, and one of the white shirts, I guess, said, well, we're summonsing like crazy, meaning giving out plenty of tickets.
Right. What that story reflected, in my mind, is that the police department and high-level police officers really believe that that's an effective crime-fighting strategy, to give out and intensify the practice of giving out more summonses if there's a particular crime problem in the community, as if that's going to somehow enable you to catch the perpetrators of serious crime. And they think, maybe they think there's a certain kind of magic that will take place if they engage in that kind of law enforcement strategy. But what it shows up, though, and what it exposes is that too much of the NYPD resources is devoted to sanctioning, arresting, picketing low-level infractions. They're not even legally considered crimes. and that the department doesn't have sufficient ability in terms of their skilled personnel to investigate crimes. The NYPD, for the most part, is not engaged in the kind of activity that you see cops do on television police shows. You don't see on TV cop shows police officers arresting people because they're walking the dog in the park after dark, or because people have their foot up on the subway seat at 2:30 in the morning, or because people are drinking a beer on their stoop while listening to the radio. And that's a lot. We're not overstating this. That is a lot of what police officers do in New York City. And there is a legitimate function for police, and that is to investigate serious offenses, offenses that hurt people, offenses that threaten the well-being of a community, and to investigate those kind of offenses and to dedicate themselves to bringing the perpetrators of those offenses to justice. And again, that's what we see on the TV shows, that they're a relatively small percentage of the police personnel in the NYPD who performs that function.
And so when New York City gets an additional 1,000 cops, all that may mean is tens and tens and tens of thousands of more summonses.
It could translate into that in very specific terms and in general terms, a greater, a more intrusive and oppressive police presence in low-income communities of color.
All the while, the police department, its high officials, claim there is no such thing as quotas. Does Mayor de Blasio's administration continue to go along with that fiction?
De Blasio is in, unfortunately, complete lockstep with Commissioner of the NYPD, Bill Bratton. And, you know, when people point out to me that Bill Bratton and de Blasio claim there are no quotas, my response is, Bill Clinton said he did not have sex with that woman, and George Bush said that the United States is not torture. Well, we know that politicians distort the truth and for political purposes and cover up the truth or lie for political purposes. And that's what's going on in New York City today in regard to the quotas.
But I heard a couple of months ago that Mayor de Blasio was down to 23% support among white New Yorkers, presumably because they don't think he's hard enough on crime.
It's hard to know why his poll numbers are so poor amongst white people. He supports, you know, Bill Bratton's police department in all their tactics and all their practices, including quota-driven Brooklyn Windows policing. And his support for those kind of practices just completely undermines his claim to be a progressive political leader, and that the main purpose of his administration is to successfully address social and racial and economic inequities, because Brooklyn Windows policing, driven by the quota system, is a central factor in creating those very social and racial inequities that de Blasio claims to address. And until we have equal justice, now equal justice is supposed to be an operating principle of the institutions in New York and in our country. And the notion of equal justice is a travesty in the experience of most low-income people of color. And we don't have anything approaching a system of equal justice in our country. And in some ways, our goal at PROP and the goal of other criminal justice and police reformers is to connect America in a very real way with those ideas. So it will no longer be a lie when people representing our country and our city and our state make the claim that we apply equal justice to all people.
That was Robert Ganji of New York City's Police Reform Organizing Project.
And your host was Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. Let's go now to some interviews from the Red Church, which I made a few days ago, the 28th of March. Assorted Views.
Talking with Dick Weisskopf. And Dick, you're chowing down here with
a meal here at the Red Church. Are you a usual eater here?
No. I was next door listening to an interesting talk at the Penny University.
What was the talk on?
Documentary films. It was this guy, Tierman. He lives in the San Lorenzo Valley, but anyway, he was very good. I learned a lot. He made it sound so simple. And then the odor just wafted my way, and I followed my nose.
The sweet scent of food?
Yeah, it's very good.
When I've eaten here, I've enjoyed it. Usually pretty good. So, have you been following the city council's refusal to change the sleeping ban ordinance?
Intermittently, but I think this transitional modular container, shipping container designed for the homeless people, you can have, they're so quick to install, there's no way you can design anything cheaper, stronger, and as effective. And those are the and user friendly. They're 8x8x20, and you can have split them in two. You can have modular interiors. Everything is there. So I'm kind of excited about getting the drawing finished and presenting it to the city fathers, you know, and the county, actually.
You know, whenever I hear of a proposal like this, I tend to think that this is a substitute for affordable housing or decriminalizing the homeless where they happen to be in encampments and setting up some places with showers and bathrooms. And
in the center?
Yeah.
The nucleus? Well, that, it's all of those things, I hope. I hope it...
There's nothing wrong with, you know, shelters of any kind. The trouble is right now you have this co-opted... Do you want to sit down here? Is this your seat? I'm sorry.
It's all right.
No, come on.
I almost finished. It's okay.
Hey, come on. You don't have to stand up.
I got a monitor.
There's a chair right behind you.
I think she's got... There's one over there, too.
They
grab that chair and sit here.
They have to be totally flexible. You know, it's flexibility.
They don't want to provide more shelter. They feel that is an incentive for idle, hobo, myth-using, killer homeless who want to eat their babies to come to town.
That's why the dynamicness of something modular is...
Leave you on the air.
It's so flexible. You can have culturally divergent residents, and even if they're somewhat...
How are you going to get the city council past the bigotry is the question.
Well, we could shame them if we had to.
That would be good, but how are you going to begin that process? It needs to be done tonight, even before these modular items are in place. So
shipping containers are all over the world.
Well, what I'm saying is tonight there are people who want to sleep. And they should not be arrested. They should not be hassled. The bathroom should be open 24 hours. The city council, which could do it with a snap of the fingers, even the staff could do it, is refusing. So what are you going to do? What form can this shame take?
I will point out to them that this is a model they can be proud of.
They will listen to you for 2 minutes, and then you will move on, and they'll give more money to consultants and developers for real estate interests. That is their main concern.
There are the cultural issues to solve have to be addressed, and if they don't address them, then they are entering the realm of malfeasance.
You don't say.
Malfeasance.
You don't say.
Well, I don't think they understand that yet,
I don't think they'll ever understand it until you shove it down their throat or kick them out the door. See, that's my concern there.
That's an option, too, you know. Things evolve this way or that way.
See, I think more important than the plan for modular housing...
They'd rather be heroes than villains, wouldn't they?
What techniques... Heroes to who? Their constituency is West Side wealthy people. Their constituency is businesses. Their constituency is the Santa Cruz Police Department and the city bureaucracy. So they'd rather be heroes to a particular group of people, yes.
Well, but what they'll come to realize is there is no better answer to this problem.
Well, I think I think that they already have a better answer. Drive them out of town, and that's what they've been doing for 30 years.
That's not an answer at all.
That is their answer. That's what they do every night. That's what they do every day.
Then let them suffer the consequences.
They are, but the consequences are there's more room for the rich to get by getting rid of the poor. There's more room for extra rich people to move in.
That would bring the people of means into this situation. They also need something to boast about, be proud of.
I can boast about having a nice new gated community where grubby folks and poor folks don't clutter up their view of the ocean. That's what they're happy about here in Santa Cruz.
Well, you know, the fact is, a lot of these transitional people, for whatever reason, they're not a myth. They're real, and the solution has to be real. And as I repeat, there's no better way to deal with the problem in terms of comfort to everybody and money.
We'll get together a task force to study it for 6 months, and we'll get back to you.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, you, I'm sorry to be so sarcastic, but that is, in fact, what I think is the answer. That I think is the most honest answer to this proposal. If people want to learn more about it, though, how can they contact you?
Resource Services, and the telephone number is, 588-1025.
And we've been talking with?
What?
Your name again?
Dick Weisskopf.
Thank you, Dick.
Thank you. I didn't know this was coming, but...
No, it's on free radio.
That they're dying. Every year that stats are being taken on this, and it's not every year, but when it happens, it increases every year. The kids are getting more hooked, the jails are getting more crowded, and the counseling is...
So we're talking to a woman and her dog and her code pink Women for Peace button in her hat. Your name's Madam? Because you're Bernie
supporter.
You're Bernie supporter, but go ahead.
My name is Susan Wirth, and I spoke along with a few other women in the public comment period about 5 o'clock in the city council meeting last Tuesday. And lo and behold, the Coonerty daughter, who's, is it her brother that's on the...
The Coonerty brother is on the board of supervisors. The
right.
Coonerty father used to be on the board,
right.
Neil.
Yeah. Now, do you know her name? Anyway, she works in the bookshop Santa Cruz, and she hates me, and she has decided a while ago that Rivet has pooped in the bookshop.
Rivet is your little pooch.
Yeah. But he's only 6 pounds, so he can't poop much. But she claims it was the worst experience of her life. Why she didn't ask me to pick it up, I don't know, but maybe I'd already left the building. But she had me arrested for trespassing, and two cops came and hauled me out of the bookshop and gave me a ticket.
When was this?
Last Friday. So, days after I spoke, I got arrested at Bookshop Santa Cruz.
What did you speak about at City Council?
I spoke about the sleeping ban and how inhumane it is, and how it ends up costing us way more money because of emergency hospital visits and police having to come and, you know, people going crazy because they're not being able to sleep at night, you know. Anyway, and I appealed to them and talked about a little single occupancy dwelling to get with a little solar panel the size of a suitcase on each roof so they could be self-sufficient with a rent to own. Anyway, I mentioned that too, so I think I was the most eloquent speaker at that time.
You've gone back to the bookshop. You know, you have a right. You have a right.
I do have a right to go.
You have a right to use the public restroom there.
That's right.
It's a visitor's restroom.
That's
it is
right.
Funded with city money.
And so, as I asked the police, she didn't tell the police why she was calling them. And as I, just after I took my ticket, I said, well, I'm allowed in without my dogs now, aren't I? And he says, no. You'll be arrested again for trespassing. And they almost put me in jail for the weekend. If I wouldn't have cooperated in every manner, shape, or form, I would have been in jail for the weekend, and I'm going to be 67 next Sunday. In the bookshop, that was after the after our Women in Black protest. I put the banner up. So about 6:30 maybe at the latest. Yeah.
Well, my suggestion to you is that you, although I kind of have to swallow my cud to say this, that you and a fellow Woman in Black go, contact the Coonerty person who's running the rest of the bookshop. Yeah, and say, look, this is a public restroom. I really apologize if there was a problem with the dog. I'd be happy to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be. I don't want you to.
In fact, I'll put a diaper on it.
Yeah.
I've got a diaper.
And this, of course, issue, it comes up at a very time when the city has closed the only full facility 24-hour bathroom that was previously open, the one on the Soquel Avenue parking garage across from New Leaf Market on Soquel, because homeless people, according to one of the workers, some of them at different times, were sheltering themselves there, and they felt the workers had to call the police to remove them. In other words, it wasn't violent crime, it was people seeking shelter and refusing to leave. And so, of course, these problems that are being created by the city's anti-homeless policies escalate and feed each other. I mean, the bathroom problem, which gave me one of my few opportunities to commend Councilmember Pamela Comstock by pressing and forcing the staff against its own inclinations to open up, well, it was supposed to open up two, but it only opened up one bathroom at night. It was nonetheless closed down in December for this, under this too much sheltering concern, which is, of course, because there is very, well, utterly insufficient shelter for people outside, and people outside are treated as criminals if they attempt to shelter themselves. I guess the one exception to that is if you are willing to sleep on the sidewalk with the Freedom Sleepers, and that happens once a week on Tuesday night. Although I think we learned, and you'll hear from Toby Nixon in a later interview, the primo Freedom Sleeper, that the police have been going after homeless people on other nights who are also sleeping on the sidewalk in the same place that the Freedom Sleepers are sleeping, if I understood his account correctly. Susan Wirth is an activist I've known for a number of years. And the bookshop Coonerty, which is my way of just titling the bookshop Santa Cruz, for a long time it had an open bathroom that was private in the sense that it was not city-funded. But the Coonerty family was quite open to allowing its bathroom to be used by people, or that was my impression. But once the Coonertys acquired political ambitions, once the elder Coonerty got on the city council, became the mayor, started proposing anti-homeless laws downtown in the early 90s and the mid-90s, and protests began developing against his policies, And targeting him as the author, which he was, of these anti-homeless laws, thou shalt not sit by a building, thou shalt not sit within, originally it was within, I think, 6 feet of a building, 6 feet of a fence, and so forth. And now, of course, it's within 14 feet of all these things, and which leading virtually no place to sit. He began expelling activists from his store, and I was one of them. And there were plenty of others. But he couldn't do that he couldn't do that lawfully, and he couldn't do that as easily once he decided to take money from the city and put up the little sign in front of his bookshop that said Citizen's Bathroom. And I described in detail, and even played audio, I believe, of my encounter with Neil Coonerty. So the last fall or the fall before, when the Salinas police chief came to town and was giving a speech with some book author in the bookshop, and there was a massive protest outside against the police murder of four or five Latino folks over in Salinas. And there is a petition circulating, which is called the Give a Shit Petition. I was going to actually get out there and do some tabling myself, but ran out of steam yesterday. But it is being done by some Freedom Sleepers and Huff members. I guess Zav is circulating it on campus, which demands that the city council bathrooms be opened 24 hours. They're pretty hefty bathrooms. And there are all kinds of ways of assuring that bathroom fixtures can't be damaged, if that's your concern. And the expense of cleaning up bathrooms is an expense of doing business. Also, the bathroom, the city council grounds are well patrolled, if you want to consider patrols a good idea at all, by these first alarm security thugs who were hired to harass the Freedom Sleepers, but kind of, well, they were actually hired to drive away homeless people years before, but they have been increased in their number, and now I guess the number has slacked off to deal with the Freedom Sleepouts that are continuing. There's slated to be another one in early April, as I've already mentioned. Let's hear some more from Susan Wirth and her description of what went on at the bookshop Coonerty and my suggestions for how to address this. I mean, I was actually able to face down the elder Coonerty, who is quite a raging bull when he gets up ahead of steam. I mean, that's just how it is. He can be very threatening. And he was demanding I leave the store. This is when this event happened about a year and a half ago, and I walked in. But I had a photographer with me who was snapping pictures of Coonerty raging at me, and I was also audioing it. And I finally got him to leave me alone. I never made it to the bathroom, but I tried. There was too big a crowd to get through the crowd to get to the bathroom. That's actually never happened to me in any bookstore, anyway. So let's hear some more from Red Church last Monday.
How was it that the dogs managed to poop in the bookstore?
That's what I don't know. See, all I've got is her. If he would have saved it in a little baggie.
Were you carrying them or were they a foot?
No, they probably were a foot. But, yeah, I just go in to use the restroom after I finish protesting. And
maybe the dog was left. All you do is send someone else in or send her an email which says, I have a right to be in that restroom. I mean, they've tried to arrest me for walking in there, and I've told them, sorry, this is a public restroom, you know.
Yeah.
Try something else.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, got to use another harassment
because
tactic.
Because I'm only 4'8" and vulnerable female,
so
they know they can sock it.
I don't
me.
Know if they're going to take it to court. What's your court date?
Well, they haven't mailed it to me yet.
So it's an infraction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just, I would get women in black involved immediately. They would immediately go.
There aren't very many of us left.
Well, there are a couple. Anyway.
Ann Simon had heard about it, and she at first thought it was something about the women in black. Because I told Marilyn Luthier that I wasn't going to be able to go in and get the banner anymore. Right? So Marilyn Luthier passed the word on to Ann Simonton, and she thought I was arrested because of something to do with the women in black.
She doesn't want to support you. If Ann doesn't want to support you simply because it's not specifically about the women in black, I would be saddened to hear that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
No. She has a dog, too, so she'll probably support me.
Well, let me know what happens with this case.
Okay, I will. As soon as it comes in the mail, that'll motivate me one way or the other.
We've been talking with...
If there's no fine, I'll just let it go. But we'll see.
And we've been talking with...
Susan Wirth, who got arrested last Friday at Bookshop Santa Cruz.
See, I don't care if there's a fine. It's an intimidating action against
me. Yeah.
I mean, I care that there's a fine.
Do you, Josh?
this is having an impact on you. You can't use a public restroom because of the prejudices of a of an owner there.
Yeah.
You know, it's bullshit.
Wrong.
Thank you, Susan.
Bullshit.
And more interviews coming up. After a little spiritual music, of course.
So we're talking with Brian T. And Brian, you spoke with us about a week ago on Pacific Avenue about a an incident of discrimination you suffered at, what was the name of the motel?
It's the Aqua Breeze Motel.
And this was your wife, who is Islamic, and
yeah,
wears a
hijab,
thank you. I never remember which is which there. And you suffered both this differential treatment, rude treatment, and pretty explicit. Well, you described it at length when we talked before. And you want to summarize what happened without going into too much detail?
Well, without going into too much detail wasn't easy because the detail is actually necessary to really make it clear what happened.
Yeah, but since you already did, folks can refer to a previous interview if they want.
Let's refer them to that because I think we're looking for there was an update as far as what's happened most recently.
What has happened?
Which is that on the 24th, I believe it was, we called our bank. I spent about an hour and a half on the phone with a banking agent named Mia. And Mia called the motel twice. On the first occasion, I spoke up and the manager heard my voice and immediately hung up. On the second occasion, I remained silent while the banker spoke to the motel operator. And the motel operator tried to insist that she'd already refunded money to us, which the banker said, no, that isn't true.
How much money was involved?
It was $100.54.
And this was because you had already, you were trying to get a refund on a night that you decided not to stay?
No. Actually, they fraudulently attempted to collect a deposit 2 days after we moved out of the hotel.
Well, they got to make ends meet somehow.
Apparently, yes. Preferably on top of other people.
Well, you're kind.
So anyway, as I say, the manager, whose name is Sue, the co-manager, the husband and wife, if you recall, Christian Sue. Sue was the one the bank agent spoke to. And he tried to insist that she refunded the money to us. First he said, it could be back in their account. And the banker said, no, it isn't. I'm the bank and I know the money is not in the account. You need not return it. So then she said, oh, well, I gave it to them first and they have a receipt for it. The banker asked, is that true? No, not even slightly.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sue tried to insist that, well, I have proof through my merchant that I refunded the money. Goodbye, and hung up on the banker again.
Uh-huh.
At that point, the banker resolved the issue in our favor. Well, she said it was resolved in our favor. But the best the bank could do was to issue a provisional credit to our account on the 29th, which would be 10 days after we made the original fraud claim.
For the amount of money that you lost.
That's correct.
And are they forwarding this to the DA for investigation?
No, not so far. I haven't quite finished describing what happened then. I then spoke to a supervisor who, in essence, repeated what the agent had said. Well, it sounds like this is wrong, but we can't actually do anything about it until the 29th. That's bank policy. And I did insist that he make sure the conversation was on record and would be available in case it was needed as evidence. She also told me, which was incorrect, that the representative hadn't resolved the issue in her favor and that she couldn't. And that's why I had her make sure this was on record, because the representative had, in fact, explicitly twice told me the issue was resolved in her favor. Since that time, actually, the fund did reappear in our account on the 26th. leaving us a grand total of $16.60, of which we're now 34 cents left.
Well, that's
interesting
reassuring.
Not very reassuring. No, not very. Meanwhile, I've written up a complete account of this incident, which I'm sending to the Council on Islamic American Relations, or American Islamic, I should say.
Fair enough.
CAIR.
All right, man. Enjoy.
And inshallah, they'll take the case and try to deter other business owners from behaving in that way.
I got you, big man.
Prosecute. You can't do it, but you can demand it be done, and we'll see what happens then. We've been talking with
Brian Seymour.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate the update.
It's a good one. I had an idea that came to me earlier to do either a column or a show of some sort called The Wandering Muslim.
Oh, why not? You can.
I mean, you've got The Wandering Jew as an idea, so why not The Wandering Muslim?
Particularly these days.
We do plenty of wandering around here, and we have plenty of interesting experiences to relate.
Well, you know, Purria Santa Cruz is looking for broadcasters. You have to find a way to create your own shows until we find a studio, which we may do at the beginning of the month. I make my shows at home. You have to have access to a computer to do that. Right now we don't.
Yeah, we do have a computer. We have a laptop.
Well, if you, it's possible that you can do it then. Give me a call at 423-4833. You can come to the, and I'll give you the time of the next free radio meeting, which is at the Resource Center for Nonviolence on Ocean Street. And you can come, and you got to pay, I think, $20 a month rent. That's one disadvantage. I don't know if you can afford that. But and then we'll have both The Wandering and The Wondering Muslim.
Yes. There's plenty to wonder about here, too. No doubt about it.
We'll wonder as you wonder. Thank you, Brian.
Well, thank you.
So we're here receiving more yellow pieces of paper from Dreamcatcher. 6.36. That's a sleeping ticket. They're both. One of them's a sleeping ticket. One of them's a smoking ticket.
Yeah, just got that a couple hours ago.
Do you have any? Do you have any reports on what's going on?
Well, no. Everybody's behaving properly lately. You know, during this Easter vacation. It's very wealthy down here. You know, as far as the vendor goes. If it wasn't too windy, it would be a little more vendor-friendly because, of, you know, it'll blow your table right off the sidewalk. And I saw some people, you know, just get way out of hand, you know, and everything was appropriately handled as far as my viewpoint. I mean, seriously, I saw a girl trying to jump off the bridge to get away from the officer. And he handled her appropriately.
And why was she being approached in the first place?
Probably because she was probably off her rocker.
So you will be doing Freedom Sleep Out 38 tomorrow night?
Yes, I am. I will attend.
And I'll be there in spirit.
Yeah. Hey, well, you know, people sleep around me no matter what, I found out. You know, it's kind of a compliment, but, you know, sorry about Chris. Rest in peace. You know, everybody seems to be within a stone's throw, and that makes me feel complimented. And I am aware of everybody.
Let's talk about Chris Pizzor, the man in the wheelchair who died very recently.
Yeah.
How long have you known Chris?
I've known Chris ever since I've been here, since September of 08. He's one of the first people that you meet or donate to or say hello to because he greets you first. So it's hard not to know Chris in the wheelchair.
What was your experience with Chris?
I was always helpful. He was always needy. Sometimes we slept together over at the YMCA's storefront over there.
Outside on the street.
Right, on the other side of the red church there. And I kind of kept him company for a while, as long as he behaved himself. But, you know, he's kind of a free spirit, so I guess that's, you know, the result of what happened to him anyway. Nobody's fault but his own. And he was in a stone's throw from me in the same parking lot, and he made me acknowledge him when he was rolling in there on his wheelchair, but I don't, you know, we don't go to the same bar, as you might say. So he was, you know, I minded my own business, and I had no idea what was going on over there. If I did, I would have tried to do something to help, but there was no help. And I'm sorry about that.
His cause of death was?
Self-inflicted.
What did he do?
I think he overdosed.
On?
Well, rumor. Whatever you overdose on, I don't know. I've never shot up. I got to keep it like that, okay? All right.
Anything else happened last week you think we should know about?
No. You know, people are getting help. There's places to go now. You really don't have an excuse to be hungry or to wander around without a blanket, because there's a place that you can go, Salvation Army, I think. I've gotten a blanket every time I've asked for one of the great ones. You don't have to go without a blanket, and you don't have to go without food. I know that's a fact.
Last time you asked for a blanket was?
Like 2008
I guess. Well, that's not very encouraging, Dreamcatcher. You've been talking with...
I hold on to my blankets because I don't like to get cold anymore.
Well, they take your bikes, they take your blankets. What can you do?
But I call somebody who cares.
I'm glad to hear it.
Right, and people do care about me, and thank you all for everything. I did lose another bike. I don't know how well I keep it chained up. I'm just not going to let it out of my sight anymore. But anyway, thank you all.
And we are talking with...
Dreamcatcher.
Thanks, Dreamcatcher.
And I've heard the opposite from others, that they have a lot of trouble finding blankets, for sure. Food too, but, you know, there are ongoing meals. Food at Bombs does serve twice a week. The Homeless Lack of Services Center does no longer offer general breakfasts and dinners, but if you go into the Armory program, which will end in 2 weeks, you can get breakfast and dinner if you're able to deal with their... get in early, get out early, deal with the situation up in the armory, have some place to stash your stuff because you can't take it with you, no pets, and so forth. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is called Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I sport a bathrobe when I do a protest, or I'm in solidarity with a homeless protest, because... at night, homeless people in Santa Cruz are criminals after 11 o'clock at night if they either lay out bedding or fall asleep. You may thank your local Santa Cruz City Council for that. And I'm going to look for a little bit of the Freedom Sleep Out audio that I thought I had here. If I don't have it, you're going to hear some substitute activity, or substitute show, I should say, because I'm running out of time in getting this ready for showtime, which is coming up too rapidly to ignore. Thanks for listening to this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I should be back Sunday with either a longer show or possibly a flashback show. Medical conditions are making it hard for me to do these shows, kind of a combination of personal health problems, but also the equipment situation. We have no studio. Although, there, as I said, is hope there might be. If you have any thoughts and you want to make $500, which we are going to pass on to someone if they give us information leading to a studio lease for a year, give a call to 423-4833.
California, where the friendly farmer will take care of you.
We're at the Freedom Sleepout 38, and it's around 9 o'clock, and we have a couple here. I'm talking with
Miss Thea,
and also sitting next to her is her husband,
Brian.
Brian, and Miss Thea, you have something to say about Wheelchair Chris, as I call him?
That's correct. I was on the street about a year and a half ago, and I was dear friends with Chris and had the blessing and opportunity to help take care of him during the time when we were at the Armory. I was working there as well, and getting to know him and getting to be very close with him, understanding the slightest bit that I possibly could, his plight and what it must be like for him to be on the street. And my word is that I love that man very, very much, and he was one of the finest and shiniest people I had ever met. His attitude every single day was thumbs up and it's going to be a great day, everybody. And then everybody would reply in unison, yeah, Chris, it's going to be a great day. And that's what I want to carry on, is that no matter what, how bad it is out here, put your thumbs up, look up, it'll be a great day, because Chris said so. Yeah, rest in peace, Chris. I love you.
And we've been talking with?
Miss Thea, Gypsy, known as Gypsy.
Will you be staying here tonight, Miss Thea?
I probably won't be able to stay out all night, still battling the cancer, but I'm out here for as long as I can be.
How about you, Brian? And anything you want to say about what's been happening with you in Santa Cruz regarding being outside?
Well, you know, it's kind of eye-opening to see it from my point of view. I personally am not on the street. I'm blessed with having the opportunity to be inside. And I met my wife through the program that I help run.
Which program is that?
Faith Community Shelter.
How many people does that serve?
Maximum is 18, but when there's like families, we try to get as many people as we can, especially during rainy seasons when there's openings.
Where is it located?
The Faith Community Shelter is a shelter that rotates between churches.
Oh, this is the one that's partially out of the Red Church?
Yes, exactly.
It's yeah, I'm familiar with that. Huh. Has there been much change in... Do you go to the Monday meals? I was there last night at the Red Church.
I used to volunteer quite a bit in the kitchen back there. Actually, that's how I became affiliated with Faith Community Shelter.
I'm just wondering if things have changed since Joel Miller stepped back.
Mm. Not really. The vestry's kind of keeping it the way it can be until another pastor is found. And... yeah, I think it's kind of too early. I think everybody's still kind of getting used to the fact that he's not there. I think it's going to need to take a little time before, you know, the whole thing starts to either come apart or come together, whichever way it's going to happen.
Fair enough. Anything else you want to say?
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Got any reports here, or is it looking?
Oh, hey. This is Sherry Cherie. I wanted to say that the interfaith thing at the Red Church served 36 people 4 years ago when I was in the program, and I've been the second top of the list since November, and I heard there's vacancies, and I really would like to be inside because it's cold out there. It's cold.
A hefty load you got there.
Yeah, I have too much stuff.
Sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Everything's on a wheel around.
Yeah, and my wheels are fried again. This is my ninth card I've fried.
In how long?
In 6 months.
You go through.
So I never thought that I would be homeless. You know, I have over 30 years of college and A- average, and I've worked all my life, and sometimes I work 7 days a week, but you know, we're only like getting fired away from being homeless ourselves, and the city council ought to realize that instead of being assholes.
I think you spoke at the city council on March 8th, right?
Yeah.
To no avail.
I try to talk to them all the time. They don't listen. They don't listen well. I think they have their earplugs in.
Or their ass plugs. I don't know.
We've
been talking with
Sherry Sheree.
Thanks, Sherry.
Bye.
Hey, Toby, here's the Freedom Sleeper stuff that you wanted.
Oh, great. Have to hold on to that.
Any reports?
No, somebody got a ticket last night here.
Do we know for what?
Well, they were sleeping in the on the sidewalk, and they started to give them a ticket for blocking the sidewalk, but they couldn't do that. So they gave them a ticket for being in the park after hours.
Was it after hours?
Yes, but they were not in the park.
They were on the sidewalk.
They were on the sidewalk next to the wall.
And you got this not because you were here, but because you heard about it from that person?
Yes. They came up, and Abby offered to put the guy on their lawsuit that they have going. That's it's about all I know. They were being assholes while we weren't here. I told people that was going to happen.
Now, any luck with your skillet sizzling activities?
No, I'm still waiting on a frying pan. I have been notified that there's not going to be any more meat coming. So even though I donated to that, I guess I'm supposed to pay for all the meals here if it's not Food Not Bombs. So I'm just laying here waiting to see if I get a pan.
Well, you're the solitary sleeper. Looks like we have
people back there. They're all trying to take City Hall again, I guess.
I do see some folks riding around on the City Hall courtyard ground.
Yeah,
some folks sitting on the wall.
I take a walk back there and tell people that they're supposed to sleep on the sidewalk, and if they expect not to get bothered, the best place to sleep is on the sidewalk.
Thank you, Toby. You're, of course, we'll have your special cup of coffee waiting for you at the Huff meeting.
I hope so.
Hi. Any reports from the street?
Fuck the streets.
Mm.
What are you doing, Robert?
Oh, reports from the street.
Right. When's the coffee?
Oh, I don't have any coffee.
Oh, right. Uh-huh. It's gone. Are you recording?
I am.
Right on. I'm Victoria Walcott. I think you guys need to get the homeless into housing.
That's a very good idea.
That's right.
You going to be sleeping here tonight?
Oh, hell no, 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 no. I'm going to be walking by and looking, checking it out. Yeah, make sure everything's good.
Any hassles in the last week on the streets?
No, they don't really mess with me because I don't have anything to be messed with. Uh-huh. You know, so.
You haven't been ticketed or?
Well, no.
Or told to move along?
No, not this time, but they do. I see them do it to others, so, yeah.
Well, thank you. Anything you want to add?
No, have a great day.
You too, Victoria.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So how you feeling, Robert?
Hey, what's cooking?
Hey.
And the City Hall grounds still have these A-frame waist-high signs up that say, area closed, keep off grass, landscaping. It's not really clear that any, looks like more weedscaping going on. City of Santa Cruz parks. They're all over the grass at City Hall. Seems a really thinly disguised, likely to be a thinly disguised ploy to simply stop people from laying down their sleeping bags there rather than on the bricks or the concrete, though this whole area should be closing within the hour. And there's a group of about five folks up near the city council. So there is a security guard kind of roaming the area, but he doesn't seem to be having much interaction of any kind with this group or any other group. Just sort of checking the lights. City council agendas are posted in the usual place. Parks and Rec has a special meeting. 4 o'clock on Friday, April 1st. Looks like main order of business is De La Vega golf course concession agreement and restaurant lease. Of course, the Parks and Rec controls this huge swaths of territory throughout town and actually has the power to close it to the public, read the homeless, at night. There's also a meeting on... Well, tonight there was a meeting of the Parks Master Plan Subcommittee. Tonight, of course, is Tuesday night, March 28th. And there's one person back here in the courtyard on the other side of the city council chambers. A lot of material if you were in Salinas, but that much material for during the day, under the new law, they would confiscate his material and give him a citation. Hold his property for 90 days at a place which for homeless people, I'm told by Salinas activists, is largely inaccessible.
You know, Pat.
No, appreciate that. So we're talking with
Toby.
And Toby, last Tuesday, a week ago, you took an unusual hiatus from your Santa Cruz activity to check out Salinas.
Yes. Here, you can, there's a blanket you can sit on.
Oh, I'm good. Okay. If it's brief, I'm good. I am sitting on the sidewalk, right. Shockingly.
So yeah, they were going to have this cleanup in the Chinatown district, which is a historical district in Salinas, of course. And right now, Tuesday, there was over 300 people that were camped out along three streets in Salinas. And so 200 activists, a couple of city council members came out to form a human barricade on Wednesday, which you weren't there for. But we did sleep overnight at the city hall Tuesday night.
How many people slept overnight?
Probably about 10.
And then how many people were on that human barricade the next morning?
There was about 200 people.
They were actually on the line.
On the line.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, that we had two streets, maybe three, but two streets we were blocking off.
Did the media show?
Yes, Action 8 did a report, got some video. I was interviewed by several journalists. I'm not sure where it all went. But I definitely got some good video. There is the guy that got the ticket, if you want to get him.
With the skateboard.
With the skateboard. But Thursday, they came through, and the word is that they taped everything off and started throwing, using like this lift loader or something, and throwing things into dumpsters and running people out.
And that's what I heard too from Wes White, who I spoke to by phone a couple times.
Hey, Dreamcatcher.
And what was what people who were trying to remove homeless property from the area on Wednesday morning and were stopped by this human barricade, what was their reaction to the barricade?
Well, there was an angry guy who tried to fight one or two of the guys. The group really kind of chased them off, and what they did was very very insulting. Is they came over with these trash containers and asked people to put their stuff in the trash containers and give